This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
Welcome to Untamed Blossoms, the podcast where we celebrate the wild and beautiful journey of womanhood. We're here to create a space where women can connect, inspire, and uplift each other. Untamed Blossoms is more than just a podcast. It's a movement. It's a gathering of strong, fierce women who are breaking free from society's expectations.
Our mission is to deep dive into the stories of incredible women who have embraced their authenticity, even in the face of adversity. We believe by sharing these stories, we can inspire others to do the same. Join us as we sit down with women from all walks of life who have faced their own struggles and emerged as the most authentic versions of themselves. From entrepreneurs to artists, activists to adventurers, we'll explore their triumphs and tribulations. Together, we'll navigate the challenges of self-discovery, self-acceptance, and self-love.
But Untamed Blossoms is more than just conversations. We're a community that gathers for events, immerses ourselves in the beauty of nature, and supports one another in our personal and professional growth. So whether you're seeking inspiration, looking for a supportive sisterhood, or simply want to hear incredible stories of women blazing their own trails, Untamed Blossoms is here for you. Together, let's embrace our wildness unapologetically and rewrite the rules. Welcome to Untamed Blossoms.
Welcome to Untamed Blossoms. We're grateful you're here. I'm your host, Amanda Riley.
And I'm Christy Riley. Welcome to the podcast.
It's Friday.
It's Friday.
Hey. We all love a Friday.
And so excited.
On this particular Friday, we have a wonderful guest.
So excited.
So excited. So, you know, Christy and I have been working on our spiritual path for a long time. And one of the biggest pieces of that has been our human design. And I met Sarah some years ago. I can never recall how many, so it's been some time. Through a college friend, Sarah read tarot for me the first time as an adult.
That was your very first experience with tarot?
I don't think it was my first experience. My grandmother was very into all of that. We did the whole Ouija board thing, craziness of all of that back then. Sylvia Brown read the Angel's books. Great memories. But that was kind of my introduction to all of this. And then when I had Sarah read for me at that event, it just really helped guide me on the right path. So that was my first time of very many at this point of hanging out with Sarah and learning from her. Christy, what about you?
I met Sarah at your wedding. She was an officiant. She did a beautiful job. And we didn't get to talk much then. We did reconnect at a Halloween party at your house. And we reconnected over human design and our love for human design. And I was in quite in need of some help at the time. I was kind of stuck. And Sarah met with me week after week. And I learned so much about myself, about my husband, about my relationship, about my relationship with other people. It was one of the most powerful times of being seen I appreciate that. With no further ado, Sarah, welcome.
Thank you.
Tell us how you found your way into human design. What's your journey's been?
Well, I really appreciate you saying about the seeing part, because I think that's, I have always been an observer. I love to see people like, since a very young age. And where that went for me was really identifying as an artist, right? I love to watch people. I love to get all the information, and I love to create things about it. So I started out doing all the kinds of things as a little kid. Like, I have memories of painting with water, you know, that's just going to evaporate on the sidewalk. But I just always wanted to be creating. And so I went to art school because, you know, you got to be a legitimate artist. And then didn't quite have the confidence in myself to stick with being an artist, which is something I think about a lot up until now, of really like learning myself. Because that's something that has been huge for me. I love watching other people, but looking at myself has always kind of been a thing. And so that is really where human design started to come into all of this, which even before that, going to art school, I was like, what am I going to do with this if I'm not going to be an artist, right? So I decided to be an art therapist, which I joke with people and say, I never needed to be a therapist. I just needed to see a therapist. I really needed to dig into what that role was, because that was ultimately a role that I played in my family and in many of my relationships. So again, observing people, making people feel seen is something that I absolutely love to do. I love to see what's special with people. Yeah, design just like stepped in. I ultimately became ill. That's why I tell people I had no business being a therapist, because I didn't quite have the skill to stay with myself and really set those emotional boundaries. And so my body was like, you can't do this anymore. And that's, there were two times in my life where I really felt like you're not supposed to be here. And one of them was walking into my first like big girl job as a therapist in a residential treatment facility. It was like immediately stepping into the building. I know I'm not supposed to be here, but I did it anyway. And I think I made it about 8 months before I became really sick and had major surgery, and then started going to my own therapy. And from there came across like, even the therapy world doesn't totally cut it all the time, right? Like, it's not the full picture. And so enter all things like human design and oracle cards and just understanding the energetic world, the unseen world, became really important to me.
Can you talk a little bit about that kind of unseen world? You know, I know we talked before this about corporate America and just capitalism in general, and just what you've noticed about that journey. And I know you got out of there, but what did you take from that experience?
Yeah, so what I noticed is that when we're all doing the capitalist thing, right, we're in big business America, or we have a job and it's secure and there's a paycheck, we really don't have to, we do, but we don't necessarily have to do that inward work. Things are secure. It's pretty reliable. And it's like the second that you decide you're going to do something differently, you're either going to be an entrepreneur or you're going to step into your full artist life, that you're immediately met with naturally a sea of doubt and worry and anxiety. Because, and I think after many years, I've come to see that as something to celebrate, because it's really evidence that what you are choosing to do is huge. And so, of course, you're going to be met with that doubt. And really then your whole job, if you will, becomes figuring out how to meet it and deal with it. You're not even ever going to eliminate it.
Wasn't it you that told me that nervousness and excitement show up the same way in the body?
Yeah. Your body really cannot tell the difference between when we're nervous and when we're excited. So it becomes the way that we talk to ourselves and really
how we mentally choose to meet that energy.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah.
I feel nervous. No, I'm excited.
Yeah.
Right? You can choose to look at it that
way. Yeah. And to also be, I'm a big believer in both, and, you know, more than one thing can be true at the same time.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. And who did you follow to do your human design work? Did you have a mentor that taught you?
I did. So I've done a lot of studying with Vanessa Henry, who is an ego manifester. Is someone that I met, it's probably been 5 years ago now, which I had come across human design before then. Mm. But for anyone who's ever pulled up their chart, especially as a visual person, the first thing I did was I looked at it and I saw all the numbers and the ugly colors. And I was just like, I can't look at this. I don't know what any of this means.
It's not pretty.
It's not pretty.
It's not visually aesthetic in any way.
Not at all. So I actually, that was probably like 7 or 8 years ago. And I just shut the book on it. Like, this is not for me. And then it came back around through, I was working in an artist group, and Rubina, who creates all these really beautiful enamel pins, is also like a major human design person and created the Aura Market with physical products for human design. So she actually did my first reading for me ever.
That's awesome.
And just for anyone who maybe is listening without having any exposure to human design, could you just give a brief, I guess, definition or just like an overview simply for someone to just get a general understanding?
Yeah. So human design is a system that weaves together many, many other systems, including Western astrology, the chakra system, the Chinese I Ching, and several other aspects. That it's a relatively new system, but it's not. That's honestly like a very, the creator, quote unquote, is a white man who channeled the way that these things come together. And so it's not new. It's just the way that he was looking at how everything comes together is newer, if you will. But so we look at these things, it outlines for us how our consciousness shows up and how our unconscious shows up. And it really provides mechanics for how your unseen energy is here to operate in the world. And it's an experiment above all else. It's like opening up the manual for yourself, like how you dropped into this world, the character that you came here to play. And to say, here it is. And really being able to, what I find is interesting is when I do readings for people, we know, above all else, I share with people, like, I hope that this feels validating for you, first and foremost. But if you ever walk away from a reading feeling like, that's cute, but how does that really, like, how could I put that into play in my real life? Or that feels so far off from where I am. The system is really outlining where we've been conditioned by life and other people in our lives and our culture. And it's really, again, an experiment to say, like, well, here's your true character that you came to play. Do you have the guts to just start showing up as that person? Because it's inherently you, and it's how your energy wants to operate best in the world.
Yeah, I think that's one of the biggest aha moments I had throughout any of the time we talked together, is that it just gives you permission to, again, play that character and just be and not fight against the current. I know we talked a minute there about corporate America, and when you told me how much I should be operating in my feminine, and I've been in senior leadership in the corporate world for so long, I just thought, well, no wonder this is so hard, because that's not what I'm supposed to be doing.
The whole opposite end of the spectrum you were supposed to be on.
Right. Yeah. And it just had never occurred to me, because we're not raised or we're not told this, you know, as we're growing and changing, that, hey, you don't have to pretend to be something that you're not. And in fact, we're encouraged to be just that, to make it, to be successful out in the world, or to make money. You're told you have to follow this exact mold, and human design is like, no, you're completely individual. And I think that's so helpful.
Yeah, individual, and also really gives us a beautiful blueprint for how our energies best work with other people.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
Because it is all, it's really seeing us all as one big puzzle piece. And the more we can each honor our own individuality, ultimately, the better we all can get along with each other.
Sure.
Yeah.
Which plays a role into what we were talking about as far as relationships. So
yeah.
How do you feel like human design has really changed how you relate with people, your relationships with people, and kind of the more, if I know that personally, not necessarily to just by human design, but by my spiritual growth in general, has brought me sort of full circle from, you know, distancing myself from toxic friends to really holding boundaries with people to, I would say, a dark night of the soul, being really alone, to now really seeking out like-minded friends and women to really hold in partnership. And I consider the two of you as part of that circle. And that's already starting to be really beautiful. And we're just getting started, right? So how has it transitioned for you? How has human design really given you permission to change your relationships?
I mean, Chrissy, I think you're really nailing the full circleness of it, that we ultimately start off on this pathway where we've been conditioned to all be the same. And I do think you have to, well, you get to choose to go through a period of time where you are moving more inwards. And I certainly, like, I feel like I've been off the map of life for honestly several years at this point. And I needed to do that just for how far burnt out I was playing that therapist role that I wasn't supposed to play. But where I have come back up around on the circle and how it has impacted my relationships is that I'm not going to cut out every single person in my life. I have done enough, like, the learning of me to know what someone, like, when someone's triggering me, it's not about them. It is totally about me. And I now feel like I have enough of the map to say, okay, let me tend to that. Let me go and find, you know, what you just triggered in my 5-year-old self, who still very much exists in me. And take care of her, because I think we ultimately are all here to care for each other. And me knowing myself through my design allows me to be present for not just my family members who drive me insane, but, you know, the person who's walking up to me at the gas station and, you know, in a panic and telling me their life story. Like, it just, I feel better prepared to meet people in the world where they're at,
right,
with a lot more love and compassion, because I'm able to do that for myself now.
And hold your own boundaries.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's what I've learned. And you were a huge help in that too, is holding my own boundaries. Yeah. It's been really incredible. Yeah. It's an incredible journey.
Can you talk to us a little more about, when it comes to relationship, how the gene keys that you mentioned?
So we're talking about relationships, and also to kind of be technical for a moment and clarify for people listening, human design is a system where when you look at that map and you see all those little numbers, those represent something called gates. The creator of human design had a student named Richard Rudd, who's the creator of the gene keys, who basically said, let me take all those little numbers and those gates and put them into a much more intuitive system. Human design is straight up mechanics. it's really, to me, the more masculine, structured left side way to view all of this. And then Jean Keys comes in and says, here's more of a contemplation. Here's the way that the energy flows. Who cares if you're a generator or a manifester? Let's just look at some of these more life themes. So one of the pathways with the Jean Keys is called the Venus sequence. And it is all about how you show up in relationship with. And this is the fun thing I've been playing with lately is it's not just relationships with other people. It's relationships you to you, relationships you to your business, relationships you to your creativity. And when we were talking about earlier that whenever you're choosing to do something differently, you're going to be potentially met with doubt or resistance. This pathway outlines for you, where's that resistance? What's the expanded version or of that energy? Because it says basically like all of our shadows, which are really survival patterns. I will say this forever and ever repeatedly, but we think that we need to eliminate our shadows or the shadows are so bad. And if you are alive in a human body, you need to have shadows. That's keeping you alive. You can't
have light without shadows.
Exactly. Yeah. And shadows are really just about our survival and what we've inherited as human beings on this planet. So it's going to show you those things which are going to want to tap on your shoulder at every turn that you take when you're trying these new things. But then it's also outlining, here's how you can meet that energy. Here's how you can take care of it. Here's what it's really asking for. Yeah. And it just like, I love looking at it through all these different lenses of relationships, because truly, I think that's what being a human being is being in relationship with the land, with people. Like, we're here to experience relationships and love, ultimately, as cheesy as it
sounds. No, not at all. Yeah.
My first real connectedness, this is a crazy story, and like, the lesson that was delivered to me, right, is I was at a yoga retreat, and my husband, current husband now, is with me. And there's all these people, and we're having this beautiful outside, and it's morning, and we're going through this practice of identify something in your environment, right? I identified this tiny little spider in front of me, right? Zitty bitty. I'm like, he's a cute little guy, you know, and other people would see the blades of grass and right and all this stuff. And as she started to explain, like, why she had us do this, I started to lay down on my mat for whatever we were doing. And the whole field we were laying on was covered by spider webs with dew on them that you couldn't see from your vantage point of the mat looking down. You had to be looking right horizontally with it. And so, and it connected all of the things that we all identified singularly. And I sobbed, right? Like, it was a powerful moment of, wow, we're all connected. And I was just looking at this little spider individually. There's millions of them clearly in this grass and millions of blades of grass that somebody else identified and million dewdrops that somebody else identified and million rays of sun that somebody else identified, right? And all of those came together perfectly. And when I put my head down, like, for that field to be covered in these little tiny spider webs that you would have never seen from any other vantage point. And it was just so beautiful, right? And those are the exact things that you're talking about.
Yeah.
And I love that they're called Jean Keys. And I think, you know, for those of you who might be listening, that some of this is a little woo-woo in your world. I also think that, you know, genomes are really becoming studied and that we really actually inherit genomes from our ancestors that mm-hmm. can go back 4 or 5 generations that is living on our genome. So you might be experiencing something that it's not that you yourself experience, right? But you may have that attached to you because of your ancestors from right. years behind. And so you may not have any point of interest for yourself. Like, I didn't have that trauma or I didn't have a reason to really have that. It may not be you.
Right.
Right. And that's scientifically proven. That's not woo-woo stuff. That's genetics, right? Yeah. It's being studied. And I think that's really cool that there's guides for those things that can show up in different ways that people don't really understand about themselves because it may not really have been their current experience. So I just think that's really cool.
Yeah. we are always, that's what that shadow pattern is we are bringing forward the best that seven generations behind, you know, all of the people that line up behind us for us to exist on this planet, but those are likely the patterns that they experienced. And the gene keys are based on the genome. The Chinese I Ching is an ancient technology that sets their 64 hexagrams. There are 64 codons within our DNA. And so when you're looking at these patterns, are, you know, depending on how technical you want to go,
right,
you really are doing DNA work when you make these adjustments.
Yeah. And I love that part of human design is looking at how people come together.
Yeah.
And I love that. And Sarah did a reading actually for Untamed Blossoms. And it was incredibly enlightening. I would say that Amanda would agree to that. Yeah. Amanda and I, as Sarah lovingly pointed out, we are two people that can get anything done. We're one of those, we're those duos that we have enough, we're manifesting generators, both of us. So we not only come up with all the ideas, but also have the energy to do whatever it is that we want. And Amanda and I, if you know us, we have a lot of ideas.
A lot of ideas. One might say too many.
Definitely too many, depending on the day. But it's exciting to be around us because you never know what you're going to get. And so I love that she did that with the business, and that the business really reflects our energy in that way. And I really thought a lot about that, and that we're supposed to try a lot of things in this business, but it's also supposed to be easy. And a lot of the things that we were contemplating trying were not easy. They were going to be very hard and very labor intensive, which, if you know us, we're comfortable in that space. So actually being in our feminine and being easy is something that we both are working towards. And it's just kismet to me that that's how this business showed up, is that it's true feminine energy, and that we're supposed to respect that in this business and be really in our feminine energy the whole way, which is really beautiful. So it's been extremely helpful.
Yeah. And I think both of us wanting to help women, that's like the number one thing we've always wanted to do, is make sure we're building community and making sure that we're helping women in some way. And we've done things as extreme as planting fig trees out in a farm. And as simple as just saying, hey, would you like to have a conversation about this thing? And both are equally as important. But I think what we're finding is that no matter what it is, we want to give a voice to people that we love and care about. And we know that all women have all these amazing things they want to accomplish. And there's something that's stopping them, whether it be the fear of quitting their corporate job, very personal to me at the moment, or if it's the fear of not having the money, or what's going to show up for me, or like what you said at the very beginning, just me with me. Mm-hmm. And I have to think about all of these things and have to deal with whatever shows up, and I have to deal with all the shadows of what's going to happen if I can't pay my bills, or that I'm not worth anything if I'm not helping someone in that corporate environment. You know, You mentioned that you wrote your master's thesis about women and work-life balance. So I would love to hear a little more about that.
Yeah, I was desperate at the time I was doing my master's. It was a three-year program, year-long, including summers. And I was doing an internship and a full-time job and school and all of this before knowing my design, which... to share personally, I am something called a non-energy type, which is laughable. It was only a matter of time before I was going to get sick, right? But so I was like, if I have to write a 200 plus page thesis, I need it to be something that can change my life. Like, I need to know, how are people doing this? And what I found out was most people are not doing
this. Not well.
No, not well. And something that really came from that research was this realization that we are all striving for balance as something that we arrive at, and that we can like hang up on the wall and say, I've achieved this life balance. And that doesn't exist, first of all. And what I also really came to realize is that when something is balanced, it's essentially like asking it to stand still. And balance has the potential to create stagnancy when you're standing still. From that time on, I really started to look at like, okay, what's my best way I can harmonize instead of balance? Because like I said, more than one thing can be true at the same time. I could feel like I'm having the worst day ever, but I can also know I'm going to meditate tonight. I'm going to, you know, like I have all these other things that are also true that can harmonize with whatever that other experience is. But yeah, I interviewed, it was 12 or 15 women mental health professionals about what their practices were, and how they practiced balance. And many of them cried during the interview because it was just this realization that, especially when you're a woman in a position of service and providing service and caring for other people, that it is just an expectation of our culture that all those other people will come before you in your life and what you're doing. And yeah, it was a lot to process at the time.
Huge burnout rate in that, yeah, in that establishment. Same with nurses, you know, I was a nurse for 27 years, yeah, and same, you know, you're just a constant caregiving. And then if you decided to be a mother amongst all of that, then you continue your caregiving at home. And then, you know, so a lot of caregiver women choose to also choose husbands or partners that they also need to caregive to. You know, suddenly you're in a caregiving mode that you are caregiving all day, every day. And it's usually because you don't feel worthy of the same level of care. And that's why I left my nursing career, is that that was towards the end of my journey. And I realized, like, I don't need to care for people, although I was grateful for my time at Children's Hospital and grateful for all the kids that I took care of. Yeah. And I wouldn't change that part of my life, but it's a lot.
Yeah.
You are definitely in service, and it is hard.
Yeah.
And it is hard not to become emotionally involved and have those emotions when, you know, somebody watches their child die in front of you and not feel bad about, you know, your own children. And my kids would also know when I had a bad day at work, I called them all on my way home, right? Even when they were off to college, is that. So it definitely is, you know, it's a hard thing to be all the things, and yeah, especially in the caregiving world. And I feel like moms were staying at home, right? They stayed home forever and they took care of the kids and they, you know, just stayed home in the kitchen, honey. Right. And we've, this may touch on a nerve for some people, but I do feel like we've gone so far the other way in efforts to get respect and to have a choice, but it's really not in our feminine energy, is best feminine energy to be out in the corporate world, right? Like it's really hard on our energy unless you get home and your husband is like, right? And he takes over and makes all the choices for you and really lets you be in your feminine energy. It's really hard, I think, for women to be in that world and then turn it off when they get home too, right?
Imagine just as you're talking, seeing it as being on a spectrum, which we often picture as being, that's one line, right? And that's a flat way of thinking about things. But if we go back to bringing things full circle and knowing that women aren't here to necessarily like go from one extreme to the other, but to bring in that more matriarchal circular way of being in the world, that's where we're headed, and really honoring that,
right,
that energy.
Yeah, I think we're definitely set up to be in a situation where it's one or the other.
Yeah.
You're either a boss babe, you're either, you know, someone who goes out there and is a girl boss and gets things done. I'm going to work, you know, I'm going to do it all myself. Or you're the other side, which many of those women do not like, which is, I'm a stay-at-home mom and I get taken care of. And, you know, when you polarize people in that way, of course people are going to dislike one another. And of course people are going to have strong opinions on the other side because it's too polarized. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be that big of a swing. There's definitely some places in the middle. And I think going back to human design, that's what's so wonderful, is it gives you a roadmap for yourself. And then you mentioned this, when you know where you are, you meet people where they are, and you're not forcing them to see your side of the story. You're just saying, hey, if this is triggering, it's something that's triggering for me. This is my deal. This is my gig I need to figure out. And let me understand that so I can meet them where they are.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. Absolutely. One of the women that I work with right now is, she just called me yesterday, and she's a financial advisor, and she's working. She's so excited because she's in this new position with a man who owns this company, and she has all these new opportunities. But she said, you know what he told me yesterday? It was, I can't believe you're an I person and I'm a we person. And she just went in on like all these horrible things that he said to her, because she's showing up fully confident in herself and what she's bringing to this company. And she said, I gave myself several hours to be upset about it. And then I said, you know what? You don't have any more room in my head. But what I said to her is that when you can start to picture, it's not just about not letting that other person have space in your head. It's like, picture what age you would have been so hurt by someone saying that. Because she said, I gave you 12 hours in my head. And I was like, you just let 4-year-old you run around wild, hurting for 12 hours. And when we can start to like put it in that way, it's like, oh, I would never do that to her. You know, like, I want to be there for her. I want to care for the situation and know that I have the capacity to care for myself in that way. And she was like, I never thought about it like that. But yeah.
Sarah, you have one of the most, and I've had other human design readings, and none of them were impactful in any way. You have the most amazing talent of, because you're so creative and you're so visual, right? Is that it's so easy to be like, I'm triggered. What stair step age can I identify and see her and then care for her? Right? Because that's what you're, and you're visually describing you going to 12-year-old, right, Amanda or Christy, and hugging her and saying, what do you need? What do you need in this situation? Mm-hmm. What did you need then that you didn't get that I can give you now? Right? Wow, what a gift. And just to have that visualization that you're so good at. And the fact that you also have therapy experience and understand all the Western, you know, DSM things, right? Like, you understand all the axes. And so you bring all of those things together beautifully with the design, and that you can kind of see where people are stuck and how they're struggling, where they're not embracing shadow. And you just give a really beautiful way to sort of look at it that doesn't feel threatening, that feels very visual. And maybe it's because I'm also a visual person, so I really respond well to the fact that you're giving really beautiful visual cues about what that is. And it's not just that. She's done it for in my own personal sessions. I mean, there's been life drafts and water, and we've got a whole lot of things that we visually work on. But that helps me so much, right? Mm-hmm. To give a visualization to the emotion, right? Whether that's my inner self, my child at different ages, or just me like, okay, I'm taking on too much and I feel like I'm drowning. Where's my life raft? Like, I want to be lounging on that with a mocktail and, you know, having a great time, not barely hanging on with just my nose above the water, right? Like, and those are great visualizations that you've given to me in our sessions about how to identify when the world gets crazy and your life gets crazy. What's that one thing that you can be like, I'm drowning. Sweet. I'm off my raft. Right? I'm off my raft. Time to get back on my raft. And I think that's one of your really beautiful gifts. And you really do a great job of giving those visual cues to all of those gates and the shadow parts, but also the beautiful positive parts. And, you know, you just do a really great job of cueing people into their emotions in different visual ways. And so I do consider you an artist.
I do too.
Even in the human design, like, it's very artful how you really present that, all of that information.
I don't normally say this to people, but a big part of that is an ability. That's you tapping into the unseen. Those aren't just visuals that we're putting out there for funsies. This is tapping into imagery that I am often seeing with you, for you, and allowing people to go there. And then we can say, oh, this is just a guided imagery, and blah, blah, but it's really more than that. And it's not me doing it. That's something that, you know, comes through me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
And right. I know you also said you pivoted away from like that service mindset to more of that creative mindset. So like to Christy's point, I know I kind of poke fun at this when I see you. I'm like, but we have to talk about you. Remember, like we're going to talk about you today also, because you are such a person who's so gifted in helping people walk through their stuff that I'm sure, and I've observed that naturally it comes to you to want to be in service of other people. Mm-hmm. But how are you able to kind of pivot away from that though and say like, I'm also going to be in service to myself and my creativity, and then you can leverage that with other people, right? But how did you kind of pivot away?
Yeah, that was really knowing my pathway with the Venus sequence. There's a placement that describes our ages 0 to 7. So even in the whole like guiding people, like, hey, let's pull from this age to this age, there are very set, clear kind of formulas that happen on this pathway. But what shows up for me in my 0 to 7 is a shadow of being highly irritable and edgy and competitive. The work that I've been doing is that really asks to be put in service, even there, mm-hmm. that's the language that's there, to be put in service to creativity, to take initiative, to ultimately push people a little bit to this point of awakening where they realize they have that connection to the unseen world, to the energetic world on their own. It's not me. But that has taken me so much work to just like, honestly, any and every little thing can irritate me to no end, truly. But to know that that's there, know it's happening. God, what do you need now? Like, in the most loving way I can muster, but it's not always pretty, and it takes a lot of work. It's very much still a work in progress, because a huge part of my design is being of service. But one thing I have started to do is look at even taking emotions and saying, what can this be in service to? How is what I'm doing, what I'm feeling in service to creativity, to my energy, to a collective energy? But it is I have to come back. I check it. Sometimes I picture my energetic field and it's like, you're walking the perimeter and your boundaries and seeing like, what could use some care here today, pulling the weeds and just doing what you need to do. It's very much a work in progress.
Love that. What have you learned about being a manifester that has required you to change how you show up in being in service, right? Like, explain some of that. Like, what's been your experience of just shifting from this is my full-time job to you're still in service to people very much. Obviously, Amanda and I loved what you provided for us. So you're still in service, but how has being a manifester made you change figuring that out?
That's one of those places where like when I first had my reading, I was like, yeah, I'm a manifester. But the truth of how I show up in my everyday was not being a manifester, right? Because each energy type has its strategy, and manifester strategy is to inform people and use your voice and go first. And those were many things that I was not doing out of making myself small, because I'm just here to be in service and make sure everyone else feels good. And I would say to anyone who knows their design and knows their manifester, it gets easier, but it does take time. It took me time to come out of that conditioning of like, I'm being the bad person or the villain if I go first, if I have my impact, if I initiate something. And the thing I've come to realize is that my energy is going to have an impact whether I'm aware of it or not. And so why not just play with it and decide that I get to have a really big, a big impact. But, you know, it goes down to even silly things of like being, this is an example of like being at a checkout, there's hand sanitizer. And I think I've shared this with you before, but I don't normally touch the hand sanitizer, but one day I'm like, I'm going to use the hand sanitizer. 2 seconds later, my husband, who is a generator, has the response. He's going to use the hand sanitizer. 2 more minutes later, the person who's checking us out reaches over and he uses the hand sanitizer. And it's just one of those like very silly things of like my choice to do that had that ripple effect. And it's happening on large and small scales all the time. And that when I can really like pay attention to that, I'm experimenting with using that, you know, in a positive way.
Yeah. What a great example of just something small that you're like,
it's so silly.
You know? But for those of you that don't know, manifestors are here to be first and to have the ideas and to sort of lead, right? That's really what they're here for.
It's initiating.
Initiating, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a big word.
And not necessarily leading, but to say, here's the thing.
Yeah.
I leave it to you, whatever you'd like to do with it. And that's right. Been a big learning for me too. I physically do not have the energy to stay with every single idea that I ever have. It's okay to share it with other people and to
let it be out there.
Yeah.
And this is just one of many series we will have with you, many episodes. There's so much to human design, but you know, before we get into the last couple parts here, could you just give a very, very high level overview of what each human design, like, so if someone's listening, they're like, oh, they're just manifestors and manifesting generators. Is that all of you? And then there's nothing else? No, there's more. So could you just share a little bit about that?
Yeah. So we're talking about energy types, which energy type is describing really your aura and how your energy is organized and how it's interacting with other people and your surroundings. So we start out with a generator aura, which is huge. You picture like energy coming off the body that could move into other rooms. You know, it comes several feet off of the body. And it's really this energy that's here to be very consistent, reliable. It's having a response. It's a big shiny magnet where things are coming to that energy type for a response, right? Where we go next is a manifesting generator, which again, huge aura. What really starts to happen with a manifesting generator, though, is this energy is here to pivot. Where the generator was maybe a little bit more steady and consistent, manifesting generator is like, I have all these ideas and I have that throat piece, which is really a manifesting generator is a connection between our sacral energy, which is our gut, to your throat. And the throat in this system is where manifestation happens, right? So we're speaking things into the world. And so they're moving out. Our energy is moving outwards. And so these manifesting generators, which I love you all so much.
Amanda and I are both manifesting generators.
But it's big. It's not just the one thing, one track at a time that generators are kind of like caring for. It's, you know, could do 5-10 things at the same time. And one thing I love to share with my manifesting generators is it's not for you to see through everything that you start either. Let yourself pivot, let yourself follow where the excitement takes you, and that it's not wrong to start something and not finish it. Yeah. But of all the energy types, manifesting generator truly moves the fastest. So let yourself. Don't let anyone hold you back just because they can't hang, right? Because a lot of us cannot hang. So then we cross over into a type which is our first of the non-energy types, meaning they don't have a sacral definition, sacral energy, which is, we all have all of the chart, all of the energy, but it's really describing like what you came with the moment you were born. And so some of us do not have defined sacral energy, defined life force energy, which is like, it's not go-to easy access. But the first non-energy type shows up as a projector. And this is an aura. So we move from looking at these big, big circular fields, which are pulling things in, to picture kind of like projectors have an ice cream cone of energy where it's like a spotlight. They are looking into the center of a person or a topic. They're here for guiding the collective. And really, they're operating on, like, it would be ideal for a projector to, you know, work a couple hours a day and kind of stand back and really show up as the expert and be recognized for all of the knowledge that they're sharing with people. Then we come to the manifester, which shows up as part of that manifesting generator. But at this type, you don't have that sacral connection. And this is only 9% of the population. And it's really this energy that is here to be kind of closed and a little bit repelling. And that is a tough thing to swallow too, I think. As much as I want to, like, yeah, I claim it, but it's not always the most comfortable role to play, because that closeness or that repellingness is to really allow for a lot of void space and a lot of connection with unseen, to allow those bigger ideas or connection with what you're here to impact the world with to come through. So you need space and need to be able to inform people to help you out to see this vision through. And then last but not least, which is the most rare, is something called a reflector. And those are people who have, if you looked at their body graph, totally open space. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of like the checks and balances of the whole system. They're here taking in everything from everyone to show up as this mirror and say, like, hey, what's really happening here? And they're only 1% of the population. So it's very rare to meet a reflector.
Do you know any reflectors personally?
Not personally. I know of several, but
yeah,
not personally.
Well, thank you for that quick overview. Like I mentioned, we'll definitely deep dive in more later. Wrapping up today, I believe we have one final question, and that is just, can you talk to us about some women in your life who have made an impact, who have changed you, or just anyone that you really feel like has helped lead you down this path?
When I think about the women who have influenced my life the most, probably my top three, number one, my grandmother on my maternal side, who really, I believe, had other abilities, but was given the life experience of being diagnosed with bipolar 1, and I don't think ever really given full support to process and explore what the traumas that she had experienced in life. But she was the person who always truly encouraged me to be an artist, even though she also was convinced that I would be a nurse. That she really saw me and loved me and encouraged me to be my most full creative self. And then I would also say my mentor and employer, and we've had so many different roles together, but her name is Mary Maynard, and she is someone that I've worked with personally and professionally for the better part of the last 9 to 10 years. And she is a medical intuitive and a registered nurse who has been practicing this kind of work for 40 years. And so I really, truly owe so much of my knowledge and skills and abilities to being in her presence and her company and her mentorship and guidance. And then I would put RuPaul in my top three, and truly loving RuPaul so much as a person who is able to take the full spectrum, which we've talked about spectrums a couple times in this meeting together, where I really personally believe that RuPaul has shown me so much about how to look underneath the surface of life. You know, oftentimes I think that we are especially in this kind of work, so interested in the etheric and the feel good and the astrological and kind of going out of body and off planet, whereas I think RuPaul is the most amazing guide at saying, well, let's actually be on the planet and let's look at everything that's happening, and then also remember that it's not that serious and this is fun and we can still have fun and joy even in the face of some of the most terrorizing human experiences on the planet. And I think about reading Rue's memoir, the newest memoir, the story when they talk about making posters for the first time to post around Atlanta, and that it said RuPaul is everything. And at first reading that, I think my initial was like, wow, the ego someone has to have to share something like that. But when you really look at it, this double meaning of RuPaul is everything in the experience of human existence, and that we all are everything, and just how beautiful that truly is. So thank you so much for having me. It has been an absolute pleasure and a joy to be in conversation with both of you. I look forward to many more, and I'm just truly honored to be here.
We're so grateful for you in so many ways, and so grateful for you showing up, and I'm going to cry again.
We'll see you next time, and remember to give us a follow on all of our socials, Instagrams, the Facebooks, Spotify.